We're going to Mars. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter's Daily Journal, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Issue number 47, volume number 3, It's Happening. And it's time to dream big again inside today's Daily Journal. Essay: We're going to Mars, Iran strikes Amazon and others. Rents decline. Mortgages rise. Buffett shrugs off downturn. Chart of the day: better than Berkshire. Today's mailbag reader poll: Trump's next move. Editor's note: today Porter turns the journal over to Jeff Brown, tech visionary and growth analyst of Brownstone Research. Jeff has been at the forefront of every major technological development of the past decade, accurately predicting the future time and time again. Here, he talks about U.S. efforts to get to Mars. In a few hours, the first crewed spacecraft in more than 50 years will depart for the moon. Artemis II will be the deepest human spaceflight since the final Apollo lunar landing in 1972, ending a decade of lunar exploration. But the Artemis trip is only the beginning of what we have in front of us in terms of getting humans into space. In 1962, the U.S. was in a brutal face-off with Russia as its primary adversary, a country that was demonstrating impressive progress with its space program. The Soviet Union had not only marked the beginning of the space age in 1957 with the successful launch of Sputnik 1, but it had also already put astronaut Yuri Gagarin into orbit in April 1961. Russia had beaten the US in putting the first satellite and man into outer space. The threat of the Soviet Union being first to the moon was not only real, it was measurable given the rapid progress being made. Gagarin's successful orbit of Earth in April 1961 was the catalyst for a remarkable speech given by President John F. Kennedy before a joint session of Congress on May 25, 1961. Mission to the Moon on May 25, 1961. Before Congress, Kennedy spoke of the critical juncture the U.S. space program found itself in, what the country needed to do about it, and why it must be unified in its mission. It was a remarkable speech at a remarkable time. Kennedy said, "Space is open to us now, and our eagerness to share its meaning is not governed by the efforts of others. We go into space because whatever mankind must undertake, free men must fully share." There was no ambiguity in JFK's message. The U.S. must put a man on the moon and return him safely to Earth. JFK went on, "First, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind, or more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish. We propose to accelerate the development of the appropriate lunar spacecraft. We propose to develop alternate liquid and solid fuel boosters, much larger than any now being developed, until certain which is superior. We propose additional funds for other engine development and for unmanned explorations, explorations which are particularly important for one purpose which this nation will never overlook: the survival of the man who first makes this daring flight. But in a very real sense, it will not be one man going to the moon. If we make this judgment affirmatively, it will be an entire nation, for all of us must work to put him there." JFK even went further afield, suggesting an even more ambitious exploration of space. Secondly, an additional $23 million, together with $7 million already available, will accelerate development of the rover nuclear rocket. This gives the promise of someday providing a means for even more exciting and ambitious exploration of space, perhaps beyond the moon, perhaps to the very end of the solar system itself. Of course, we know how the story ended. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin made it to the lunar surface on July 20, 1969, and successfully returned to Earth. Indeed, before the end of that decade, I couldn't help but be reminded of JFK's proclamation to go to the moon, and how it ignited the nation in a unified mission to beat the Soviet Union, when I was watching President Trump's inauguration speech in January 2025. He said, "The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons. And we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars. Yes, we're going to Mars, and we're going a lot sooner than most people think. No greater ambition or achievement. As we are seeing with tonight's launch, NASA's Artemis program to return to the moon is already well established and moving forward. And while the new missions to the moon will be more significant than those during the Apollo program, and lay the foundation for a permanent presence on the lunar surface, it's something that the US had already done in 1969. Mars is as grand a vision today as the moon was back in the 1960s. It's our nearest planet capable of supporting a manned outpost, and, At least in the short term, the human race is best option for becoming a multiplanetary species. If we care about the long-term survival of the human race, there is nothing more important for us to achieve. Ironically, President Trump's proclamation comes with more certainty than President JFK's plans to go to the moon. The advancements in not just aerospace technology, but any technology related to space exploration have been remarkable in the last 5 decades. And of course, there is one company at the forefront of it all. The most innovative aerospace company in history, the one that will make the president's vision of planting a U.S. flag on Mars a reality. That company is SpaceX. It would be logical to assume discussions with SpaceX founder Elon Musk had some influence on such an ambitious national goal. SpaceX has transformed the industry and dominates in both launch capacity and number of successful missions to Earth's orbit. There is no company or country even close. And it's the rapid improvements and development of the SpaceX Starship that are key to making it to Mars. On January 16, 2025, SpaceX launched its 7th test launch of a Starship. The media, as usual, was highly critical, as the Starship itself blew up before reaching orbit. Musk and his team were quick to determine the likely cause, but the test launch was still impressive, nonetheless. SpaceX was able to return the first stage booster to the pad, with another picture perfect catch by the Mechazilla. There have been subsequent tests, the most recent one being in October 2025. All these launches are leading to improvements, as SpaceX had a complete redesign of the avionics, a redesign in the propulsion system, and new feedline systems for the Raptor engines. There have been major upgrades to the Starship. And as we saw in Musk's comment above, the plan is to learn, to make further improvements. The point isn't perfection. It's to push the boundaries, test capabilities, and improve rapidly on a short feedback loop. One of the key reasons SpaceX can innovate so quickly is the rapid iterations of its technology. And now speed is more important than ever before. Critical windows to go to Mars. While President Trump didn't give any specific timeline for planting a flag on Mars, planetary alignments define Mars launch windows. These windows are critically important, as they only arrive every 26 months. They represent the optimal time to launch, that which requires the least amount of fuel and travel time to reach the red planet. The next windows are November 24, 2026, December 10, 2026, December 31, 2028, January 16, 2029, 4 dates in the next 4 years. Musk has long stated the goal to send uncrewed starships to Mars in the November and December windows later this year. Given Trump's proclamation, this presents an opportunity to include payloads on those starships to send materials in advance of a crewed mission. If the starships successfully land, this would be an incredible asset for future crewed missions. Success in 2026 could make a December 2028 or January 2029 launch of a crewed mission possible. And if that doesn't happen, early 2032 would be an almost certainty. It's happening. We're going to Mars. It's time to dream big again. It was this belief that prompted JFK's "Why Go to the Moon?" speech at Rice University on September 12, 1962. It's this speech that tends to be remembered the most regarding the ambitions of the U.S. space program during the 1960s. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things not because they are easy, but because they are hard. JFK's vision inspired millions who wanted to pursue careers in science and engineering. I believe that Trump's mission to Mars will do the same. It's time to dream big. It's time to go to Mars. Jeff Brown, Baltimore, Maryland. P.S. Jeff is expecting the biggest buying frenzy in history when SpaceX goes public, as early as this year. Elon Musk predicts SpaceX could turn each $100 invested into $100,000. In fact, this could be the biggest IPO in history. You can get ahead of the crowd by claiming your stake today, starting with as little as $500. Learn how by going here. Tell us what you think of today's journal. PorterStansberryDirect@gmail.com. 3 things to know before we go. 1. Rents are dropping. Mortgage rates aren't. National rents fell 1.7% in March, the 34th consecutive monthly decline. Rent is now cheaper than a mortgage payment in 50 of the largest U.S. cities. Buyers still need to earn $111,000 a year to purchase a typical home, compared to just $76,000 to rent. Mortgage rates will remain high throughout the year, so this trend is likely to continue. 2. Iran escalation clashes with Trump's exit ramp. President Trump will address the nation tonight and is expected to announce an Iranian ceasefire request, which Iran has preemptively dismissed. In fact, the Iranian Republican Guard is not backing down. The nation's fighting force named 18 U.S. tech firms, including Apple, Nvidia, Microsoft, Google, Palantir, Boeing, and Tesla, as legitimate military targets, threatening their Persian Gulf facilities. Already today, Iran hit Amazon's cloud infrastructure in Bahrain and a Qatar-chartered oil tanker, reinforcing its chokehold on the strategic Strait of Hormuz, which Trump signaled must be reopened or the U.S. will blast Iran into the Stone Ages. 3. Buffett says the market correction was nothing. Warren Buffett, speaking yesterday in his first on-camera interview since stepping down as Berkshire Hathaway CEO, said he wasn't impressed by the recent sell-off. Asked whether stocks looked cheaper after the worst quarterly performance in 4 years, he was blunt. No. Buffett noted that he's watched markets fall by more than 50% 3 separate times during his tenure at Berkshire, and the recent drawdown doesn't move the needle. We aren't in it to make 5% or 6%, he said. Buffett confirmed Berkshire will deploy cash if prices fall far enough to make businesses attractive, but for now, the company remains parked in $373 billion in T-bills and cash, a war chest built over 13 straight quarters of net selling. Chart of the day. Better than Berkshire is better than Berkshire. Last year, Porter created the Better Than Berkshire Tracking Index to record the performance of a basket of publicly traded companies to replace same-sector private businesses in Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. Year-to-date, and since inception, Porter & Company's Better Than Berkshire has outperformed, showing a return of 4%, while Berkshire itself declined 4.9%. Today's poll. Trump's next move mailbag went to buy gold. Chris D. writes, "Thank you so much, Porter, for your dedication to educating your readers. I have never read anything by anybody explaining how gold reacts to dollar, credit, inflation so eloquently yet so understandably. All my children and grandchildren think of me as a gold bug already, but now I have an investment research professional of the highest skill, intelligence, and understanding explaining it far more clearly. I hope and pray they get it. I've been with you since the pirate investor days, and it has been a wonderfully enlightening experience. I have maintained about 25% to 30% of liquidable savings in gold and less in white metals. The feeling of stability and sense of security is irreplaceable. That is what I've tried to impart to my heirs. The crisis isn't coming. It's here," Clayton H. writes. "Hi Porter. Thanks for the continued analysis. Being heavy on energy, I'm doing okay. It's interesting to watch the market jump on any hint as it did yesterday. I get the feeling it's an expanding balloon and one day the air will rush out. I want to postulate a different and more cynical scenario than you write about, and that is that these people in charge are not stupid. Once in office and handed the book of horrors that described the true state of things, they devised a plan which is now in effect. Not that I see these people as good. I subscribe to the view of Washington that most politicians were crooks who pursued power and that those who were not, generally became crooks once exposed to power. Instead, these people are brutal and see that as how one must behave in the world, as we have been stooges for too long, and enrich themselves in the process. Look at immigration. While brutal in approach, the flood has been stemmed. It is that for the last 40 years, untold riches have migrated from the US to the Middle East. Just look at Dubai compared to most of our major cities, and with American dominance, thanks to the Permian, etc., in energy, the US could now reverse that. So the process would be to boost domestic supply and add Venezuelan heavy oil to the mix to better suit our refineries, giving us more export capacity, destroy the appeal of Middle East energy and the ability to ship it, cripple Russia's energy, add the off chance that we take control of Iran's oil, and America becomes the dominant supplier of energy worldwide, with the ability to control who ships what and how much of a cut we take. Now those riches flow back to the US, paying off the deficit and strengthening the dollar. It's a simple answer to perplexing behavior. What do you think?" Porter comment. They're not nearly that smart. When to buy gold, Tory H. writes, "Hi Porter, thank you for your excellent article on when to buy gold. I appreciate the analytics and the number crunching you laid out. It gives a solid base to make a reasonable forecast as opposed to just a shot in the dark or a gut feeling. The connection between dollar-denominated debt, in all four forms, government deficit, loan amount inflation, refinancing, and offshore dollar credit, is a great insight into the factors that influence gold prices. I'm going to assume that retirement accounts should also put 20% of their assets into gold. I'm currently 69 years old and want to preserve and grow that wealth as well as turn some over to my heirs. Thank you again for the great analysis. I love being a Porter partner and look forward to many more years of excellent service from Porter & Company." Porter comment. My best advice for people who are retired is to follow my permanent portfolio, which offers investors equity returns, while using non-correlated assets, bonds, gold, cash, to dampen volatility. This is a diversified strategy that only requires annual rebalancing, not frequent trading. Our hard money allocation is split between bullion, via ETF, gold streaming, FNV, and Bitcoin. Please note, the investments in our Porter & Company top positions should not be considered current recommendations. These positions are the best performers across our publications, and the securities listed may, or may not, be above the current buy up to price. To learn more, visit the current recommendations page of the relevant service, here. To gain access or to learn more about our current recommendations, call our customer care team at 888-610-8255. 1-888-346-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue.